This is Molly Hemingway of The Federalist. Join me, my husband Mark of Real Clear Investigations, Dr. Robert George of Princeton University, Jack Phillips of Masterpiece Cake Shop, and others for the 2021 Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 23rd and Saturday, July 24th at Concordia University, Chicago. You'll find a conference schedule and you can register at issuesetc.org.
There is no doubt that the transgender agenda has come to dominate so many facets of our social and political life. What about medical ethics? How did it find its way into otherwise reputable bioethics and medical publications? And what is being said in those publications that is advocating for the transgender agenda? Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're going to be talking about two issues with Wesley Smith for the remainder of the program, a bioethics journal advocating ongoing puberty suppression in children, and healthcare workers and a COVID vaccine mandate. Wesley Smith is senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, an attorney and consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Do Harm Medicine, and he's columnist for National Review Online. Wesley, welcome back.
Hey, Todd, how are you?
Very well. How has transgender ideology found its way into otherwise reputable medical and bioethics publications?
Well, one of the great secrets I think people are not aware of is that most of the professional journals, whether it's bioethics or medical, have really gone, as they say, woke. The hardest left-wing ideology is now being pushed in these journals, in addition to their normal kind of science articles that you would expect. And so the New England Journal of Medicine has actually published a piece in which they said that suppressing or blocking puberty is settled medicine, when it, of course, isn't. The last piece I wrote about, where a bioethicist suggested that puberty be blocked over the objection of parents, was published in the Journal of Medical Ethics, which is on the Oxford University campus. So we're not talking about some kind of a fringe deal here. And it's published by the British Medical Journal, this Journal of Medical Ethics. So you see in the most influential journals really have fallen for transgender ideology, and they really believe in it.
So how does one of the latest publications advance this ideology and actually advocate for the possible physical harm of patients, we're talking here about children, to alleviate their psychological pain?
The bioethicist in question, who I believe is at University of Arizona, but I'm not sure where her affiliation is, has basically said that prioritizing the physical over the psychological is not correct because it doesn't, in her opinion, take account of the psychological severity or permanence, that is, how we feel the anguish we might experience. And so even though there are potentially really important side effects to consider when you block a child's normal puberty, meaning blocking the development of secondary sex characteristics and so forth, you can have less bone density, for example, a form of osteoporosis. You don't know what it's going to do to the child's brain or the long-term impact because there aren't any studies. Even though that may be there, she thinks that because, you know, the child wants what the child wants, and she's not even willing to weigh in that this child we're talking about is prepubescent. A prepubescent child under the law is generally incapable of making those kinds of decisions. I mean, for example, a child who's 12 can't get her ears pierced without parental consent. And yet we're talking about advocacy for forcing parents out of the picture when it comes to stopping their child's normal maturation. It's truly authoritarian.
So what in particular do these articles propose that doctors do for children who have gender dysphoria?
Well, most of them are saying, and there is beginning to be a little bit of dissent, I'm happy to say, but most of them are basically saying that once you've done, you know, your investigations, if the child is really psychologically depressed or potentially suicidal, and that we should decide that a 12 or 13-year-old child knows that how they're going to feel when they're an adult, 18, 19, and we should begin to block puberty so that they don't develop the secondary sex characteristics, so that when the full transition occurs, that this child will look more like the sex that they identify as. There's also even worse than that is you've got some documented situations where like 13-year-old girls have been given, biological girls have been given mastectomies. I mean, that's permanent. And the alarming thing is that many of these children who are going through this confusion and this anguish change their minds by the time they get through puberty. And there was an interesting 60 Minutes show a few weeks ago, and I urge your listeners to watch it, where there were actually children who had transitioned as children who are now wishing to transition back to the sex with which they were born and really regret that adults allowed them to experience what really is a mutilation. And I think those children, I hope they sue whoever did it because it's just outrageous.
And again, if health professionals object to performing this, if parents object to this, what happens?
Well, we've got a problem. I mean, there's an increasing call in bioethics, in legal journals and medical journals to do away with what's called medical conscience. In other words, if a doctor doesn't want to do these procedures, that will be called discrimination and subject them to professional discipline or perhaps to a lawsuit. That hasn't happened yet with regard to blocking puberty, but there is a lawsuit in California against a Catholic hospital involving an adult in which a transgender woman, a biological man, was going to have a hysterectomy. And the hospital found out that this was a transgender surgery and refused to perform it because under Catholic moral teaching, you cannot remove a healthy organ. Meaning, in order to remove an organ, there has to be a significant pathology. Such example would be uterine cancer. Well, of course, you could do the hysterectomy. The second thing is, under Catholic moral teaching, you can't sterilize, again, absent a significant pathology. So the hospital applied Catholic moral teaching that they would apply to anyone. It wasn't aimed at this transgendered patient. It was principles that they would apply to anyone. And the courts of California are allowing that hospital to be sued for discrimination by this patient, even though the hospital helped that patient find another hospital that did the surgery. So if there's a couple of million dollars, which in California I can certainly see happening, of damages assessed against this hospital, it's going to be Katie bar the door. And with regard to parents, if it is deemed child abuse to prevent, which is some of this advocacy, prevent children from having these transition or pre-transition kinds of procedures, who knows? The child may be taken out of the family home. The parents may be ordered to provide these hormones. That's already happened in Canada, where a father was basically denied custody because he wouldn't accept that his child was the other sex and has actually been jailed for contempt of court because he refused to use that child's preferred pronouns.
So how does the agenda of equity play into this?
Well, equity is an issue not of equality of opportunity, but it's about equality of outcomes. And it's very subjective. With regard to the transgender issue, everything is about the internal life, the internal I, the internal feelings of these patients. But the problem with feeling instead of thinking is that feelings are transitory. They change. So if there's nothing other than the idea that we have to give all of these minority groups, whatever it is that, and particularly the sexual minority groups, whatever it is that they think will make them satisfied. So healthcare itself is being, let's say, expanded from treating illness, promoting wellness, to actually helping people lead more fulfilling lives as they see it.
Have children already been subjected to ongoing puberty suppression over against their parents' objections?
I don't know about, certainly against one parent's objection, but not necessarily against both parents' objection that I'm aware of. So if one of the parents is willing to go along, that parent is usually the one that gets allowed to decide by the courts.
So How has the medical profession become so susceptible and even servile to the transgender agenda?
You'll have to ask them, but it really, to me, is a moral panic, Todd, that this agenda, which is not very old, it's just a few years old, has just been galloping along so that if you say, wait a second, let's think this through, you are accused of being a bigot. You are accused of being a hater when it's actually the contrary. You're not a hater. You love these children. You don't want them used in this way, which, by the way, in my view, is unethical human experimentation, because these drugs have not been approved for the use of blocking puberty, healthy puberty. The drugs that are used to block healthy puberty, normal puberty, have been approved to treat illnesses that sometimes arise in terms of maturation. So this is an off-label use. And I want your listeners to also understand that the slight pushback that I began to describe is beginning to occur, because in England, the National Institute of Clinical and Health Excellence, which is the National Health Service's sort of healthcare rationing organization, has basically said, wait a second, we should pull back from doing this puberty blocking because there's such little evidence that it provides real benefit in the literature, and there's plenty of fear that it could cause real harm. And in fact, to show you how bad things have gotten, the American Academy of Pediatrics has actually supports puberty blocking, and yet I went to their website and listened to this. It says, the AAP's own website, quote, research on long-term risks, particularly in terms of bone metabolism and fertility, is currently limited and provides varied results. So we are now allowing children to be used in an experimental way when we don't know what the outcome will be. We don't even know whether there will be a significant benefit psychologically, and we certainly don't know whether or not what the extent of any potential physical harm would be.
Wesley Smith of the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is devoted to upholding the sanctity of human life, both in our church body and in the culture at large. Learn more about the efforts of LCMS Life Ministry at lcms.org/life, advocating for the unborn, weak, and vulnerable, lcms.org/life. On the other side, who is Ezekiel Emmanuel, and why does Wesley say that his middle name should be Mandate?
Christian greeting card makers, gift shop owners, laser cutters, church banner creators, ornamentalists, poster purveyors, jewelry designers, fine artists, hymn writers, wood carvers, UV bed printers, and authors all love Issues Etc. And you'll find our work at adcrucem.com. That's adcrucem.com.
Job saw the city as a wasteland, as if devoid of God, witnessing injustice to the poor by the corrupt, lawlessness of criminals, trafficking of children, blatant immorality, thinking God could not see wicked deeds done in the dark of night. Yet God never abandoned Job, nor his city, groaning for mercy. God is working through the living Redeemer, hands etched with salvation, pointing to the resurrection to come. Join us at lcms.org/citymission to seek peace and shine the light in the city.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
We confess that the Church is one holy, Catholic, and apostolic, and yet, as we look at the Church here in 2021, it hardly seems one holy, Catholic, apostolic Church. How do we come to grips with this reality? Is the Church one? How is she united? How do we look to her head, Jesus Christ? Well, this question and many others are discussed in the June-July issue of the Lutheran Witness. It's all about the Church. To order your copy, visit cph.org/witness and visit our website, witness.lcms.org, to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you look at the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person. Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR21. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Wesley Smith is our guest. We're talking about healthcare workers and COVID vaccine mandates. So Wesley, moving on to our next topic, who is Ezekiel Emanuel and why do you say his middle name ought to be Mandate?
Ezekiel Emanuel, he's kind of like my white whale. he is probably the most prominent bioethicist in the United States. He's very well known as one of the architects of the Affordable Care Act. He was Joe Biden's, one of his primary COVID advisors during the campaign. And he constantly writes about how we should mandate this and we should mandate that. And he has, for example, said that all children should have to get flu shots every year. He wrote that in the New York Times. He has said that doctors who oppose abortion, if they're asked for an abortion, should have to perform that abortion anyway because it's not medically controversial. And if they don't like that, they can get out of medicine. And he has just written a piece basically saying that every healthcare worker in this country should be vaccinated and that the mandate should not be from government, but should be from the hospitals and the healthcare services as a condition of employment. And so in my view, that's a form of corporatocracy. You're basically getting the private sector to do that which the government may not be able to do. And I think it's also profoundly unwise for a lot of reasons.
Why are some healthcare workers themselves cautious about COVID vaccines?
That's something I think people should consider because one of Emanuel's objections and complaints is that you have a pretty significant number of healthcare workers who are refusing the vaccine. And I think that raises a very interesting red flag. So why are those who were so intimately impacted by COVID, you know, and they're not cowardly, they've worked in the trenches of healthcare, they've saved lives, many of them have gotten ill themselves, why are they reluctant to receive the jab? I've received the vaccine, so I'm not an anti-vaxxer on this, so I got the Moderna vaccine, and, you know, I have no regrets. But it's interesting that so many healthcare workers, it looks like it's almost half, are basically vaccine hesitant. And 18% of frontline workers, healthcare workers, are outright opposed to the vaccination. So that's an interesting question. I don't know the answer. Perhaps they are concerned that this is a relatively new technology. It deals with, it's not like the flu shot where you get dead virus, right, into your system so that your system creates antibodies. It actually deals with the RNA, and this is a new technology, and it has not been approved by the FDA. It was given an emergency use approval. That's not the same thing at all. In a sense, it's almost like being an off-label use. It's legal, but it has not gone through the full FDA approval process, and therefore it's still experimental.
You suggest that there are ways to achieve Emanuel's goal, which is to increase the vaccination rate among healthcare workers without mandates. What would that be?
Well, what I suggested is that, first off, engage in persuasion, try to allay any fears that people have. But it seems to me that rather the mandates, if you start mandating this as a condition of employment, that's going to breed further distrust from not only healthcare workers, but the public. So it seems to me that the way to go, rather than force people to get shots and put chemicals in their bodies that they don't want, well, if you're worried about healthcare workers, just test them every twice a week, say. And we've been doing that before the vaccines. It's an effective way to keep people from who are infected from coming into contact with patients. And many patients will have already been vaccinated. So, I mean, you're already having a tremendous potential not to get infected. And I think the testing is the better way to go than trying to coerce people and force people to do something that they don't want.
Speaking of the public's trust, what have we learned about the experts during the last year and a half?
on a lot of different areas, we know that they're not necessarily candid with us and that sometimes they don't tell us the truth. And I think that's a real problem for the country because and for the world, because the institutions, not only in terms of healthcare, but generally, seem to be collapsing. Trust in institutions. And it's not paranoia. Our institutions have failed us repeatedly. And I think that is leading to a crisis of confidence. And it's a I think, a very serious problem going forward because you don't know who to trust and who to believe. And therefore, people may decide, well, this person told me this, and because I think that person's a liar then or lied before, I'm not going to believe them this time, you know, the boy who cried wolf issue. Plus, it's getting very political. Things that are scientific should not be as political in terms of, let's say, COVID as they've become.
Finally, with the minute,
Ezekiel Emanuel.
Ezekiel Emanuel, yeah. He cites the Hippocratic Oath in defense of his mandates. How do you respond to that?
Well, I actually, when I read that part of his piece, I laughed because the Hippocratic Oath is specifically opposed to abortion. Specifically says doctors shall not provide abortions. And yet Emanuel not only believes in supporting abortion, but he also thinks doctors should be forced to do it. So please forgive me if I don't think that his reference to the Hippocratic Oath carries any credibility.
Wesley Smith is senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. He's an attorney and consultant for the Patients' Rights Council, author of several books, including Culture of Death, The Age of Duharm Medicine, and columnist for National Review Online. You'll find a link to his columns at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk on Demand Archives. Wesley, thanks.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Friday on Issues Etc., we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. Listeners with the best votes will win the LPR bundle package. You can listen in advance on the Talk on Demand Archives page at issuesetc.org. Send your vote via email to talkback@issuesetc.org, post at facebook.com/issuesetc, or tweet at issuesetc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Bahama Mama, Ocean Pacific, Paradise Island. Retreat from the heat with a shaved ice snow cone from Tropical Snow in Caseyville, Illinois. It's right across the street from Collinsville High School. Tropical Snow is open weekdays from 1 to 9 and weekends from noon to 9. Premium snow. Epic flavors, lots of love. Tropical Snow, across the street from Collinsville High School at 2134 South Morrison Avenue in Caseyville.
Hello, this is Pastor Kevin Golden of Village Lutheran Church in Ladue, Missouri. The saints at Village Lutheran are proud to be part of the Issues Etc. 300, sharing in their Christ-centered, cross-focused proclamation of the gospel. If you find yourself in St. Louis, join us on Sundays at 8:15 and 10:45 for the Divine Service, 9:30 for Bible study and Sunday school, as we receive Christ's gifts of forgiveness, life, and salvation. Or visit us on the web at www.villagelutheranchurch.org.